Our scripture reading this morning will be taken from Luke chapter 12, verses 16 through 21. Luke chapter 12, 16 through 21. I'll be reading from the New King James Version. Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yieldeth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?' So he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things by which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God.'"
This morning we are beginning a new series of lessons over the next few weeks. We are going to ask some challenging questions in our own lives. We're going to be asking ourselves if there are any other gods, any other things that we are putting in God's place in our lives. We know that when it comes to describing the one true God with the capitalized G there in the name, we know there's only one true God, and yet sometimes we treat other things as if they are that God, or maybe other ideas that we hold in our minds, other concepts sort of infringe on that idea of serving God. And so we're going to ask some hard questions. And as a friend of mine likes to say when he's talking about a lesson that might step on some toes, he says, "They always start with my toes and work their way down." And I can tell you that as we look at some of these questions, it's been a challenge for me thinking through what God calls us to do as we serve Him and Him only. And so we'll look forward to doing that over the next few Sunday mornings. We'll say, just to let all of us know, next Sunday we will be in Cookeville. I'll be preaching in a meeting at the Willow Avenue congregation there, and you'll be blessed to hear Brother John Vaughn preach in the morning. And then that evening, our young men who participated in the Future Ministers Camp will be leading the service. And so those will be two wonderful blessings. I look forward to hearing the recordings of both of those. That'll be an outstanding time that you won't want to miss. But as we think about starting off this series and this lesson, asking ourselves if there's anything that's taken the place of God, we're going to come to this parable that Jesus tells in Luke very quickly. But first, I want us to think about a scene that truly would have been unforgettable. If you can imagine what it would have been like for Mount Sinai to be wrapped in smoke, for the soundtrack of this event to have been the thunder and the lightning and the sound of trumpets. When we see Moses receiving the Ten Commandments in the book of Exodus, and as God gives those in Exodus chapter 20, this is the kind of scene that is set. There is no doubt in any of our minds as we read through that, as we see what God did taking His people that had been slaves and delivering them from Egypt, the incredible miracles He showed there, crossing of the Red Sea. Now they're here receiving this covenant. He's initiating this covenant with them. It would have been an unbelievable sight. And as we read that list of 10 commandments, at the very beginning of that list, the very first thing that is mentioned is that you shall have no other gods before me. Have you ever wondered why that's the very first thing on the list? Why is that the first of the Ten Commandments? I think it's interesting as we consider not only the Ten Commandments, but all of God's laws, that any time we break one of God's laws, any time we sin and we go against God's will, essentially, we're breaking that first commandment. I don't know if you've ever thought about it that way. But for me to break one of God's laws means I have to say in my mind that there's another authority that's more important than God. There's something else that's guiding me rather than God's will. Even just looking down that list of Ten Commandments. If someone were to steal, it would be because at some point a desire to have something overruled the desire to follow God and to serve Him. So that became the authority. Or when you see the command against adultery, at some point the lust that individuals had overruled their desire to serve God. You see, any time that we sin, it's because there's something we're allowing to have authority in our lives rather than God. And I think that's why it's so important and why it's so vital that it's repeated over and over again as God is giving the law that there would be no other gods. He reiterates the command in verse 23. And in case there's any doubt as to why that's necessary, we come over to Exodus chapter 32. And if you would turn there very quickly, we'll come back to the book of Luke in just a moment. But in Exodus 32, we see an actual example as to why that command was so important. Because we see what happens when the people become impatient, waiting for God, waiting for Moses to come down with the law that God has given. And so verse 1 of Exodus 32 reads this way. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people assembled about Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us a god who will go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." Isn't it amazing that after all they'd seen, after they'd seen the Nile turn to blood, the source of life there for the Egyptians turn to blood, after they'd seen that they served a God who was in control of the frogs and in control of the gnats and in control of the locusts, and then you have the death of livestock that affected the Egyptians but not the Israelites, the death of the firstborn where God provided a way the Israelites could be protected, and then to have a moment where you were pinned up against the Red Sea and for God to deliver His people on dry land. They're standing there on the sandals that had trudged through dry ground in the middle of the Red Sea, and they're getting impatient on this God who had delivered them so far. They're getting impatient and they want there to be an idol that's built. And it's not that they say they don't need to serve any god. They want an idol that could be a visual that they could look at, and that could be what goes before them. Now, this would have been very familiar to the pagan society where they had been living in Egypt. And this idea of a calf, while it might seem strange to us, was a very common concept of deity in the ancient world. And so to have this golden calf really wasn't too out of step with the pagan religions. They were just looking for something that they could look at and say, this is it, this is what we serve, this is going to go before us. And it's so easy when we're looking back on them to wonder how that's possible. And yet when I look at my own life and ask myself, are there any things that I'm tempted to look at and to say, that's what I need to serve? That's something visible. That's something tangible. I can reach out and physically touch that. I can physically see it, and that's what I'm going to serve. That's what's going to be the driving motivation for my life. All of a sudden, I realize that human beings haven't changed that much over the years. We still struggle with that sense of putting something else other than God in front of us and saying, this is it. This is the reason I live. This is the source of all my blessings. And so as we begin thinking about some of those temptations, we're going to ask ourselves if sometimes possessions can be what get in the way. If sometimes things can be what get in the way. We know what happens in verse 2 of Exodus 32 when Aaron gives them that command to take the gold rings and which they all brought together in verse 3, and he took it and he fashioned this molten calf and said, "This is your God." And we have to ask ourselves, are there any physical things, are there any of the materials we possess, just the stuff that we have, that can get in our way and can take our focus off God? It hasn't been too many months ago when we saw a moving truck pull up outside of our house, and this truck was huge. And I thought, I'm so glad we have a truck this big. It will get everything in this moving truck so that when we move down to Columbia, we won't have to make another trip. We've got it all together. And it was looking like things were going to work out just fine until they started taking things out of the attic. And I don't know if your attic is like our attic, but they kept taking things out. And I couldn't believe we had that much in there. We didn't have a very large attic. But finally, one of them came up to me and said, "You know, this isn't all going to fit." And I was amazed with just how many things we had accumulated. Just how easy it is to accumulate stuff. And you can probably relate to that. That feeling of looking around and saying, when did I get all this? When did we accumulate all this? And it actually was a good prompting for us to realize, well, do we really need all this? Do we really need all of these things? It's so easy to get our focus on material possessions. And so I want us to take a quiz right now. Just a quick quiz. See if you can recognize, this should be an easy one to start off with. If you can recognize what this is. You can probably recognize one of these. Years ago, if you wanted an album, this is what you would buy. This is what you would purchase. This is what you would listen to. You would put this on your record player and you would be set to go. Now, this one might be a little trickier, but how many of you can recognize one of these? This is an 8-track. And kids, if you're wondering what an 8-track is, just ask your parents to ask their parents and they'll tell you what an 8-track is. If you wanted to listen to music in the car, this is what you could do. And you could listen to this on the go. You could have an 8-track here. So now we get a little more current when we start thinking about this. Now you're starting to speak my language here. This is what we always had growing up. We had these cassettes that you'd put in. You had cassette players in the car. And these, you could rewind these. So if you liked the song, you could rewind it to the beginning and you could hit play again. And we probably all recognize what it was like to go. If you wanted to pick up a movie that you'd rent, you'd get it on VHS and put it in the VCR. And we still have a VCR and we still have plenty of old VHS tapes. You may have the same thing, but if you're going to get a new movie that's just been released, these are hard to find. Now, why are we going through all of these? There was a time when if you wanted to have the most technologically advanced thing on the market, you would have picked up an 8-track. That this would have been, if you wanted to impress your friends, this would have been what you did. Or if you wanted to have the latest music, you would have picked up a record. And if you wanted to walk by a store and look in the window, this is what you would have looked at. Isn't it interesting how things change? There was a time when all of these things, if you wanted to really impress someone with having the latest in technology, that's what you would get. And yet, just years later, those things are outdated. And the things that are out right now, that when we look on the internet or we look in a catalog and we say, boy, that's it. You know, if I could just have that, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't people be impressed if I just had one of those? Or if I just had the latest version of this? And yet in just a few years, those are going to be outdated. You probably saw in the news about the passing of Steve Jobs, and I read an article of all the patents that he'd been involved in and just saw how things were constantly changing. And so when I start putting my identity in material possessions and I start saying, you know, if I could just have this, then I would be okay, I'm going to be in trouble because those things are only temporary. And yet we still have that temptation to earnestly desire possessions. And that brings us to Luke chapter 12. I hope you've turned there because as we think about the parable Jesus tells, we have to understand what happens in the first few verses before he begins it. In verse 13, we read, "Someone in the crowd said to him, 'Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me.' But he said to him, 'Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?' And he said to them, 'Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions.'" This whole parable has its stage set by a desire someone has for Jesus to be a kind of judge or arbitrator. Someone thinks he's being cheated out of his rightful inheritance and comes to Jesus and says, "Can you tell him to share the inheritance with me?" And Jesus says, "Beware of covetousness." And as we read through this parable that we've just gone over, I'd like for you to look for how many times we see a personal pronoun that's used, like "I" or "mine," by this rich man. He told him a parable saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things which you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Did you catch how many times he used the phrase I or mine, referring to himself? This rich man teaches us a lot about the grip that possessions can sometimes maintain on our lives. And as we think about this parable that Jesus tells, we see very quickly that his life was built on possessions. His life was built on what he had. Here he'd had this incredible crop, and he was going to put it in barns, and you can tell where his focus is. Did you know that there are a total of 11 times we read those personal pronouns used, like I or mine, 11 times in just these short few verses? He's thinking about himself. You see, sometimes possessions can tempt us to be focused only on ourselves. If I'm thinking about what I want to possess, I'm not going to have a lot of time to think about other people. I'm not going to have a lot of time to think about those who are around me. I'm just going to be thinking, how can I get this? And it seems that he's building up his own security. Now, it's not wrong for us to plan for the future. In fact, if we want to be wise stewards, that's what we'll do. But did you notice he seems to be pinning all his security and all his hope for what's going to happen in future years on these goods that he had on earth, these material things? That's where he's putting his security. And so they focused him on himself. And not only did they focus him on himself, but they distracted him from being able to serve others, to being able to help others. Here he obviously had more crops than he could use in a given time span. He had plenty. And there were a lot of other uses he could have found for those crops. There were probably a lot of other people that could have been in need, but we don't read about that. We read about him thinking, what's going to be good for him? They distracted him from being able to reach out to others. And we know that's a real temptation when it comes to focusing on possessions. He's talking to himself. There's no one else there with him. He's speaking to himself and thinking about himself, and ultimately they blind him to God. This parable ends incredibly abruptly. Can you imagine what it would be like to listen to a parable or a story that's being told, and it ends with a death? It ends with his soul being required of him. That's the end. And Jesus explains that's how it will be for those who are trying to be rich for themselves, but not rich toward God. It's a startling ending to listen to. And you get this sense that this man was so focused on possessions, they blinded him to God. And any time that we put what we have on earth in context of eternity, it gives us a better perspective. Jesus would say something similar in Mark chapter 8 and verse 36, when he would ask that question, "For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and yet forfeit his soul?" When I think about what I have in light of eternity, that changes the equation. In the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes, we see something similar to this haunting question that Jesus ends with in verse 20. At the end of that verse, he says, "Now who will own what you have prepared?" Your soul is required of you. Now who's going to own everything that you've accumulated? And in the book of Ecclesiastes, we see something similar. When we read in verse 2, verses 18 and 19, "I hated all my toil, which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to a man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool, yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun." Both questions in the Old and the New Testament point to the same thing. There's going to come a point where I'm not going to be here to guard my possessions and to see how they're used. And so I have to ask myself, what's the point in totally investing myself in what I have if I know there's going to come a time I won't be in charge of it? And who knows what's going to happen after me in the generations to come? No matter how much I accumulate, there will still be someone else who will be in charge of it. And so he built his life on possessions, and we see the effect that that has in this parable. We also realize that his possessions could not save him. In fact, so many times what we possess can tend to possess us. What we think we own can sometimes own us because we're seeking to serve that and to keep it up and to take care of what we've got to the exclusion of other things that we need to do in life. It's easy for us to fall into this trap of covetousness, and there are several passages in Scripture that point us to that danger that Jesus is dealing with right here. When Paul would write to Timothy, he would remind him in 1 Timothy 6, verses 9 and 10, that those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. That is serious language. The language of those who desire to be rich, who above all else are seeking for wealth. And we can even see as Jesus was constantly talking to his followers about the rich. In the ancient world, if someone was rich, that would have indicated to them they must be blessed by God. They must be living the right kind of life. And so it would have shocked his listeners for Jesus to say, you know, it's challenging, it's difficult. He would even use the word, as we think about what things are possible with God, that it's impossible with man. It's impossible with men, but possible with God. In Mark chapter 10 and verse 25. And so we see how challenging it is for us to look beyond what we have. And we see many in Scripture that had material goods and they used them for God's glory, but it's a challenge there. And it's a real one that we need to be serious about. Especially in a society where, although we know there are many questions about the economy and there are many questions about our future, we still have so much. And to look at how much we have, there are so many ways our focus could be taken off God. There are so many temptations and so many distractions. And so it's important for us to be countercultural about that and realize that these things are not only sometimes able to lead us into covetousness if we get too wrapped up into them, but that they're also temporary. When Paul wrote to the church at Corinth, he would remind them in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 18 that those things that are seen are transient, they're temporary. It's the unseen things that are eternal. A good test for whether or not something is going to last is, can I see it physically? If I can see it physically, then it's temporary. But if there's an unseen reality, that's what's eternal. And which should I invest in? Which will be the better longer-term investment for me? Paul points to that important question. And we face the same temptation that the man in this parable faces, and that is we're tempted to build our lives on possessions. We might not think of it that way. We might not think about the fact that I'm building my life on what I have, but that's often the case. There is a play you may have seen, Fiddler on the Roof. We performed that play in high school, and I can remember the main character. He has this song, If I Were a Rich Man, and if you've seen the play, you kind of know it's sort of a comical song as he describes what would happen if he had all this wealth. And the big laugh line that the character has in that, and I remember listening to it and thinking about it in rehearsals and in performances when I'd hear him say that when riches were described as a challenge, or riches were described in a negative way for the world, as if it were the world's curse, he says, then may the Lord smite me with it, and may I never recover. And sometimes we feel that way. Okay, if riches are so bad, why don't you just smite me with some of those riches? And if money can't buy happiness, well, just let me try for a while, and let me see what can happen. We have that same temptation, but the same things can happen. In fact, the passage that we just saw very briefly, Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 10, states that he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, and he who loves wealth with his income. In other words, there will never be a point where we say with these physical things, well, we have enough. Because whenever I get to this point, I'm going to look around and say, well, you know, if I just had one of those, then I'd be happy. Do you remember growing up when it came time for your birthday? And maybe there was something specific. You knew that was your birthday present. You knew that's what you wanted. And I can think back to specific years and specific presents that I wanted. And I can remember as a child thinking, if I just have that, I'll never need anything else again. If I could just have this particular game or this particular object or whatever it is, if I could just have it, I'll be set for life. I won't need anything else. And what's interesting is the very next year, there was always something else that you wanted. That's kind of how it works. That's how it works with things that are temporary. And again, it's not that it's bad to be blessed with monetary blessings. We can all fall into that category. We've all been blessed monetarily. The challenge is, how do we react to it? Do we have that desire where we're constantly wanting something else? Because the Bible tells us that's not going to satisfy. Or are we trying to use what we have to serve the God that's number one in our lives? And you see, the same challenges that he faces in this parable, we face today. Because if I build my life on possessions, I will tend to be focused on myself. If I'm constantly thinking about what I have or what I want, or even if I'm constantly tied up my resources and trying to get those things, I'm not going to be available to give my time for others. I'm not going to be available to give to a cause that's worthy, that'll further the spreading of the gospel. I won't be available to do that if I'm so wrapped up in what I want or in what I own. They also distract us from others. I'm not going to be looking out for the needs of others if I'm focused on what I can get. And they can also blind us to God. I read recently a story that Norman Martin tells about the sinking of the Titanic. On April 14th, 1912, as they were boarding some lifeboats, there was a story told of a woman there who was given the chance to go back to her stateroom for a few minutes before getting on a lifeboat. And as she goes back to her stateroom, because of the hitting the iceberg and all the turbulence that took place there, there were some of her jewelry scattered on the floor and even some money that had been scattered over the floor. And she stepped through all of that and took three oranges, the only food that she had available, and rushed back to the lifeboat. Isn't it fascinating that when danger struck, what was really important became different? Things that would have been so important and so valuable weren't really valuable when what she needed was food to survive. And so when we think about what we have in the context of eternity, that clarifies what's truly important. And this is not the message we receive. The message we constantly receive is what you need is this. This one possession is really going to shape your life. It's going to give you that lasting fulfillment. And even when we look at the advertising that goes on around us, we see them pulling at those same needs, that if you just had this, your life would be together. I read recently a man who had worked in advertising. He described himself a consumer anthropologist. And here's how he was describing putting together an ad for a car company that he was promoting. And he says, "My task was to hijack your imagination, brand your brain with our logo, and then feed you opinions you thought were your own." Now, not every advertising campaign out there has that agenda, but there are some that do. There are some who want us to think this is our need and we have to have this. And so we have to be very critical and say, wait a minute, what's the message that I'm being sent here? When we look at this parable, we see very clearly that possessions can't save us. Only God can. Possessions aren't going to be able to save us. They're temporary. They're not going to last forever. They can't offer us what we'll need to live eternally. Only God can save us. And while that may seem like a simple conclusion, it's so easy to lose sight of it. If we think back to what we read earlier in the book of Exodus, and we realize that they made this golden calf, and it's a familiar scene to see what happens when Moses comes down from the mountain and sees what has taken place as they've made this golden calf, this idol, immediately after God has given this law. And there's something interesting that Aaron says in Exodus 32:22-24. He says, "Let not the anger of my Lord burn hot. You know the people, that they are set on evil. For they said to me, 'Make us a God who will go before us.' As for Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what became of him." Now, all those things are true. We know all those things happen. And then he said this. He said, "I said to them, 'Let any who have gold take it off.' So they gave it to me, and I threw it into the fire, and out came this calf." Have you ever thought about that? I threw it in the fire, and here came this calf. We might think that's foolish, but if we turn around in our lives, we might realize that without thinking, we've allowed something else to take hold. So here are a few sets of questions as we close that we're going to be thinking about over the next few weeks as we ask ourselves who we're serving. There's nothing special or magical about these questions, just some thought-provoking questions. We're going to ask ourselves, number one, what do I spend my time doing? Number two, what do I spend my resources pursuing, my energy, my money? What am I going after there? What do I spend my time thinking about? Number three. When I don't have anything else to think about, what comes to mind? And number four, what do I dream about for the future? What are my dreams for the future? Those four questions can tell us a lot about who we serve, a lot about what's in control. And they'll be challenging for us, but we're going to go over them in the next few weeks. This morning, as we think about the grip that our possessions can have over us, I just want to remind us only God can save us. And it may be that you're here this morning and you need that salvation, that you need to submit your life to Him, that you need to come forward in faith, that you need to repent of how you've been living, that you want to confess His name and put Him on in baptism. Or it may be that you've lost sight of the one true God and you need to make that right. If there's any way we can help you, please come as we stand and as we sing together.